Under the Golden Dome is supported by the Iowa Bankers Association. Bankers across Iowa are ready to help Iowans reach their financial goals to get them where they want to go. Learn about the difference of Iowa banks by following Iowa Bankers on Facebook and Twitter.
From Iowa Public Radio News, this is Under the Golden Dome, a weekly show about the Iowa legislature. I'm John Pimble. The President of the United States is imposing a larger tariff on steel and aluminum. It would result in steel from other countries costing more for American companies to buy. At the same time, the president reaffirms his opposition to the North America Free Trade Agreement and wants it renegotiated or terminated. During his presidential campaign, he said it was the worst trade deal the United States has ever signed. NAFTA was established in the 1990s, allowing Canada and Mexico to trade goods with minimal tariff taxes or fees. That includes many agriculture products going to those countries from Iowa.
Well, I've made it pretty clear where we stand on that.
Governor Kim Reynolds supports NAFTA because Iowa is one of the country's biggest exporters of agricultural products.
Mexico and Canada are number one, and Canada's one, and Mexico is two trading partners.
The governor says NAFTA is an important part of growing Iowa's farm economy.
With commodity prices under input cost, this is something that we monitor very, very closely. I continue anytime I have an opportunity to speak to any of the cabinet members that have anything to do with trade initiatives to highlight again just even the instability and when we're talking about it, the impact that that has on our ag community and on our farmers and our manufacturers. And so I've said I'm okay with modernizing NAFTA. It's a 25-year-old plus trade agreement, so that makes sense. But I am not in favor of withdrawing the impact that that would have on our state and Midwestern states and really states all across the country, but I'm focused on Iowa, would be devastating.
Aside from NAFTA, the president's wish to impose tariffs on metal, something he's repeatedly said as starting a trade war this week, could affect Iowa's relationship with China. Right now, China imports many agricultural products from Iowa. And Governor Reynolds fears a backlash.
Our farmers are the first target, and that's who we know. That's where the unintended consequences will fall, is on our farmers and on our manufacturers. And so, again, it's about finding balance, and it's about eliminating the uncertainty that comments like that have on especially agricultural states like Iowa. So we continue any chance that we get to say, I'm okay with free and fair, and it's a balance moving forward, but that will have unintended consequences. They're already talking about the impact of soybeans in China and how they retaliate. And so that is a tremendous concern of mine and something that we continue to work with not only our congressional delegation, but the individual that represents us out in Washington, D.C., also in our communications with the White House and with the different secretaries.
One of those people Reynolds has been talking to includes Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue. He was in Des Moines this week to swear in Bill Northey as the Undersecretary for the United States Department of Agriculture. At the ceremony, when Perdue is asked by reporters how Iowa farmers should react to President Trump's threats of a trade war, he says,
"Pray."
Perdue says the president is a unique negotiator.
"And sometimes he keeps people off balance, even his own staff sometimes. And he certainly did that this last week. He believes solely in his heart, America first and America people first. That includes American agriculture."
Perdue says President Trump's unconventional comments about a trade war may position the U.S. for a breakthrough in the renegotiation of the North America Free Trade Agreement. Renegotiation talks for NAFTA began last year. On Monday, the seventh round of negotiations took place. The next round happens in April. The process of changing NAFTA could take several months, which means the future for Iowa's agricultural exports is uncertain. Getting health insurance can be challenging for a person who can't get it through a group plan through their employer. Individual health care plan providers stopped selling to Iowans last year. Then one of those companies changed its mind and re-entered the market, but the rates for plans increased by an average of 43%. For some, the premium cost can be offset by subsidies from the Affordable Care Act, but not everybody qualifies. This leaves thousands of Iowans with an expensive insurance premium option with only one company to choose from. There is a bill in the Senate that could change this. It would allow anyone who is a member of Iowa Farm Bureau to buy a plan known as an association health plan. Farm Bureau membership is open to anyone. Debate for this bill is floor managed by Senator Randy Feenstra.
The bill will allow Farm Bureau to sell health benefit plans. These are not considered health insurance plans. However, the bill will require that these self-funded plans be administered by a third party, which is Wellmark, and which is registered under Chapter 510 of the Iowa Code. The key for this is to be successful is having two Iowa organizations work together and work collaboratively to create these health benefit plans. And since we all agree that these are very solid organizations, this seems to be a good test model for us to try. Independent insurance agents will be able to sell these programs. And if there is success, maybe next year we can look at other organizations that Iowa citizens trust, and then we can create maybe other plans as we move forward.
Senator Tom Shipley fully supports this plan and says it will especially help rural families.
This is a whale of a start. When you get people that are having concerns given to them from their bankers and lenders that they may not be able to stay in their business, whether it be farming part of the time and another business on the side, those bankers are very concerned they're going to be able to stay there because of what their health insurance of $30,000 a year is costing their family. You know, last year, I believe it was, when we talked about the school equity plan, I made the comment to people about how this can help people. And you know, when everybody's talking about helping those school districts, I made the comment, here's your opportunity. If you're talking about rural Iowa, here's your opportunity.
Senator Joe Bolcom asks Feenstra to yield about cost questions.
Can you give us a little bit of background on what kind of the essential benefits or what the benefits are and kind of the ballpark of what premiums people might look at in these new plans?
Sure.
Thanks.
So just like the Affordable Care Act, all right, you have your metallic ways of doing things. So the silver plan will have approximately $3,000 single deductible. You'll have office copays. You'll have drug copays. You'll have coinsurance for out-of-pocket. There will be a lifetime maximum of $3 million. And then you can buy a high deductible plan it would be $6,000 or $7,000 as a deductible, and then the rest is paid out of pocket. The cost, we're looking at approximately 30 to 40% less than the Affordable Care Act plans. And why is that? Because we're not dumping all this other stuff on. We're just trying to get to the bare bones. So I struggle with where you're going, Democrats. All we're trying to do is help those that can't afford insurance. And we're trying to find a way to help those that cannot find insurance. And if you want to fight against that, that's fine.
No, thank you, Senator Feenstra. I think we just want to make sure that we're selling policies that are actually going to cover health conditions. I think, as I said a moment ago, you know, Senator McCoy actually said, the insurance commissioner isn't involved in making sure that these policies are up to snuff, which ought to be a red light going off in your mind. And the Republicans in Congress who repealed the individual mandate, Senator Feenstra, are why we're having this conversation today. Senator Grassley, Senator Ernst, Congressman King, Congressman Young, Congressman Blum, they all voted to destabilize the insurance market here in Iowa. Democrats are in support of making sure people have coverage. That's the record.
This bill would allow plans from Wellmark not to comply with the Affordable Care Act, so potentially pre-existing conditions will make a person ineligible for a plan. Senator David Johnson asks Feenstra about what this plan may or may not cover.
Let's get back to the pre-existing conditions issue. If someone has not been covered by insurance, but has a pre-existing condition, would that person be covered under this plan?
how it was before ACA, just like what's going to happen here, is you fill out a form and you note what your history is, and then the plan will decide if you should be covered or not.
Okay. So is this plan now, right? I want to make sure I understand this. I've gotten a lot of contacts from people. They've told me about some of their situations with insurance. I said that I would listen to the debate, and I'd probably ask some questions, and I'm just going to decide based on what those discussions are here. So, is this going to cover mental health? Is this benefits plan going to cover mental health, prosthetic devices, cancer clinical trials, diabetes, dental care with anesthesia, ER services, mammography, oral cancer meds, I mean, prescription contraceptives, reconstructive surgery, skilled nursing care in hospitals? Those are all mandates in Iowa right now. Are those going to be covered by a non-insurance product?
You asking me?
Yes. Yes, I am asking you, Senator Feinstein. Okay.
Thank you, Senator. I just want to say, this is the dumpster fire that's been created. What we've done is we've added all these things, and when you add all these things, you create an unaffordable health care, health insurance. So now what we're trying to do is find an avenue to reduce the costs. Yeah, are some of these things bare bones? Absolutely. But you know what I want to do? I want to make sure that somebody at least has some insurance, so if they have a significant event, that they're covered for those events. Or the other option is not having an insurance at all. The great thing about these plans is you get to keep your doctor, and you get to save $2,500 or more, whatever it is. You can save $500-$600 a month.
Okay. Let me ask if a family has an autistic child. Because I did get an email from a family in Northwest Iowa who has an autistic child. And I believe they're under the assumption that those autism services will be offered. And that's why they want access to this. Is that an automatic? Is that a slam dunk?
It'd be based on all the things that were before ACA. Those are the things that are trying to be covered. I can't answer if autism will be covered or not.
Okay. All right. Because I think that there's some people out there who are telling us that they have certain situations, whether it's cancer, autism, diabetes. Would there be adverse selection here? This is one thing my insurance agent told me to be aware of with this plan. Are we going to just take the healthiest people and put them in this plan and say, well, we're not going to be able to cover these things, so that those people, if they can get insurance, go into a different plan and raise premiums for everybody with chronic illnesses, severe chronic illnesses? I mean, I'm really concerned about that, as we all should be. You know, I think everybody knows in this chamber we have very, very good insurance, and I'm not hiding that fact. But I don't want people to get into a situation where they have false hopes with what the coverage of the insurance is going to be. So, Senator Feinstein, I appreciate those answers. I hope that there's a little more discussion here, which I think we need.
As the discussion continues, Senator Michael Breitbach says this bill can't be called insurance because of the restrictions placed by the Affordable Care Act.
Because of that, we can't have this be covered directly under the insurance commissioner like I would prefer that it would be. Now, just because the federal government can't get their act together to clean up what happened several years ago doesn't mean that Iowa shouldn't step forward and try to clean up Iowa as best we can. We've got thousands of people out there right now that don't have any coverage. Any coverage. That's disgraceful. Or they've got an ACA plan that maybe has a $7,500 deductible. None of us in this room have to worry about that I know of. None of us have a $7,500 deductible to meet when we go to the doctor or go to the hospital. I want these plans back. Wellmark and Blue Cross and Blue Shield has worked closely with the Farm Bureau and independents in the state of Iowa for many, many years, and those plans kept going until the ACA took them out. I'm confident that they will come up with a plan, and they'll put it together, and it'll be responsive to the needs of the people in Iowa. They're not going to let us down. Their reputation is on the line, and so is ours. And I want this plan to move forward. I want our families to have the coverage that they deserve to have. And I can't wait for Washington, D.C. to get their act together before we move and get something affordable here in Iowa.
Senator Pam Yoakum says a fundamental question that needs to be answered is health care a right or a privilege?
So let me tell you about my own personal experience with my own child. She had coverage under a John Deere plan. Pretty good insurance, right? And when she was about 15 years old, she started having seizures. So her doctor, her adolescent medicine doctor, ordered an EEG of her brain to see what was going on. And of course, Sarah's functioning level is somewhere between a toddler and 9 months of age, pretty young. And I said to the doctor, well, there is no way we're going to keep Sarah to sit still long enough to get electrolytes on her head and to sit still enough to get a reading on what's going on in Sarah's brain that suddenly in her adolescent years she was having seizures. So we brought in an anesthesiologist to sedate her enough to get those electrodes on and to get a reading. Got the reading, doctor calls me back, and he said, I knew him well, and he said, Pam, we need to get an MRI of Sarah's brain. I said, what are you looking for? Well, the right side of her brain has, the right side of the brain, the brain waves are blocked. Something's going on. I says, what are you looking for, a tumor? And he said, yeah, I'm looking for a tumor. I said, well, we're not going to get Sarah to sit in an MRI machine for a half hour or whatever and stay still enough to get an MRI reading. Can we try a CAT scan instead? And he said, well, we'll try that first. If we get a good enough picture of her brain from a CAT scan, maybe we won't have to take that MRI. But again, keeping Sarah still enough to get a CAT scan even required us to again bring in an anesthesiologist to sedate her enough to get that. So we got that, and lo and behold, no tumor, thank God. But we did have to deal with the seizure disorder. So we file the insurance claims, and I get a notification that the anesthesiologist care is not covered. Will not be covered. And I argued with them and said, well, Sarah has disabilities. She's not like a typical child. She has a seizure problem, and we're trying to figure out what's going on and to take care of it. And they said, no, denying coverage, the usual and customary. And no matter how hard I fought for that, did not win. So, responsible parent and taxpayer and everything else that we all are in this room, I made arrangements with that anesthesiologist to make a payment monthly to pay off that $2,000 anesthesiologist bill, which was, I might add, 25 years ago. It was a lot more money 25 years ago than it is today. And I eventually did pay it off. But my point is this, members. Senator Johnson asked the right question. These plans will not cover people with pre-existing conditions. Many people are going to be lulled into this idea that this plan is going to provide them benefits that they're going to sadly find out are not there. And what I really see this plan doing, as much as I agree with you that we need to be doing more, we're cherry picking. These plans are going to have the most healthy among us in those plans and leave behind the sickest among us and the rest of the marketplace. And the idea of insurance to keep prices affordable is to spread risk. But we're not doing that if we're going to cherry pick and pull out only the healthiest that will be eligible for these plans. So I want you to think about that. I think every one of us has had some kind of an experience in our life that has helped to inform what we think and our decisions that we make. And I wanted to share that, just that small little experience I had with my own child. And that these plans that I believe you're going to vote on today would never cover the Sarah Yoakums of our state.
Senator Tim Kapoutsian, who is a farmer, rises in support of this bill. He says anything the legislature can do to put forth plans that cost less is worth a try.
This is something, it's right. It's something we have to do. This is something. Thank you, Farm Bureau. Thank you, Wellmark, for you've got the capital, you've got the financial soundness, and you're willing to put your foot forward to try and move the needle a little bit. Let's move the needle. Let's help my neighbors. Let's help your neighbors. They're not just farmers. They're small businessmen, people that own, maybe it's not like the Lowe's moving in across from the hardware store, the small town hardware store. This is more like the small town hardware store moving in across from the Lowe's. They're not going to be the big guy on the block here, I don't believe. This is just going to be a small segment. Let them try. Just let them try.
As Senator Feenstra delivers closing remarks, he attacks Democrats and the Affordable Care Act.
I just want to make sure everybody understands Obamacare, it's over. It's going to go away, right? It's just a matter of time because it just didn't work. So here we are. It's up to you, each one of you, how you want to vote. Again, I just look at it as complete black and white. Right, black and white. We talked about this in the tax bill. You know, socialized medicine, bigger government, taking more from the taxpayer. Right, that's what Democrats want. Republicans want smaller government, reduced taxes, and a choice to lower their health insurance. Mr. President, these are the end of my comments, and I ask to move the bill and ask for a recorded vote.
The bill passes 40-9 with 10 Democrats voting yes. Independent Senator David Johnson also votes for the bill. This is Under the Golden Dome, a weekly podcast about the legislative session. I'm John Pimble. Right now, a person who wants to teach in the school system is required by the Iowa Department of Education to take one or more praxis subject assessments. These are tests. Passing these tests are required to receive an educator certification. A bill in the House would eliminate this requirement. Representative Tom Moore is the floor manager and says he's been approached by school officials saying it's too hard for them to hire new teachers with this exam as a requirement.
The difficulty in hiring quality teachers in certain fields, such as ag, math, science, CTE, and the difficulty of hiring out-of-state teachers wishing to relocate to Iowa with years of experience. The reason for this difficulty was this obstacle that is in the way of many of our teachers, and that is the praxis exam. The praxis exam is taken by 2,500 Iowa students approximately every year. And of those 2,500, 100 approximately fail the exam. That's 96% passing and only 4% failing. And you say only 4%, that's not much. No, but that's 100 students who have spent thousands and thousands of dollars in their four-year program to become a teacher, to meet a lifetime goal that they have had to educate the young of our state. and we're telling them that as a result of this exam, your score was not good enough for you to qualify to get a teaching certificate and complete your program.
Representative Moore introduces an amendment that would make it retroactive to 2012. It would make those who have failed the test eligible to get a teaching license. Representative Mary Masher asks Moore why he chose the year 2012.
It's my understanding that the practice exam started in 2013, and so this would take us back to before that exam. That would include all of the people that have then taken that exam and failed it.
What about 14? Why didn't you do 14 or another year? Why 12?
2012 was before the practice exam was initiated. And so everyone after that would have taken the practice exam and failed, whether it be 2013, 14, 15, 16, or 17, would then be included in this retroactive.
So how many individuals would that be?
Approximately 500.
500 students that have failed the exam and would possibly apply to the Board of Ed Examiners for their licenses.
That's correct.
Is this pertaining to an individual? Where did this bill come from? Or the amendment?
The amendment comes from me because I believe that there was no, not any individual. There are a number of individuals, 500 of them, that could possibly turn into excellent teachers for us to have here in the state of Iowa.
It's my understanding that you have a relative that may have been, that this could apply to, am I right?
No, you're not.
Okay, is it someone you know?
I do have a neighbor that, yes, has failed this after she was hired for a job but was not able to pass the praxis twice and left the profession.
Okay, obviously, we do not want to see a dumbing down of the profession. We have standards in place and we have expectations from our teacher prep programs. And we do that because not everyone should teach. You are absolutely right. You said that earlier. Not everyone's cut out to do that. And it should be both what happens in the classroom, but they also should have the content knowledge to be able to pass an exam, just as accountants, acupuncturists, appraisers, architects, barbers, chiropractors, dentists, dietitians, electricians, hearing aid specialists, interior designers, landscape architects, lawyers, massage therapists, mortuary science folks, those are our morticians, physicians, plumbers, podiatrists, psychologists, real estate folks, respiratory care individuals, social workers, speech pathologists and audiologists. All of these have professional licensure exams, and they are required to pass them in order for them to practice in their profession. To eliminate those requirements for teachers makes no sense at all.
The amendment passes. Representative Art State, a former school teacher, says this discussion about the bill is not infuriating him, but he does find it insulting and depressing.
We want to assure our parents, our students, that we have quality teachers in the classroom. And this test is part of that process to ensure that. And for reliability and validity, it has been well tested throughout the country. 47 states. I don't know how we have the audacity to question it here when we know nothing about it. I want our teachers to be qualified. I want our teachers to be able to teach the content area. I don't know if any of you know this, how you felt when you found out that something you were taught was really not true. That the teacher that may have taught you didn't really know the subject area, or if you were in a classroom where there was no control. This is one of those assurances. So let's just assume that we have a teacher shortage, like many say. We have a shortage. Any number of reasons we have a shortage. We could address them. We could address teacher pay. We could address bargaining rights. We could address insurance. We could address the class sizes. We could address the cuts to programs and classes that have been occurring over the last 7 years in our districts. I've been up here time and time again every single year talking about the results of our underfunding of our schools and why that's leading to teacher shortages and poor morale. So what's our response? Get rid of our standards, get rid of the qualifications. What's next? Licensure, certification? Going the wrong way, folks. I ask the body to resist this bill. Say no to getting rid of standards for quality teachers in our classroom. Thank you.
As Representative Moore closes, he says, since this test became a requirement 5 years ago, approximately 100 people per year fail, and this test is an unnecessary barrier.
I have high standards just like you all do. But you know what? We had high standards before 2013. Iowa has always been a leader nationally, and we didn't have a darn test to decide whether you were qualified to be a teacher. And that's for most of you that are in this room that aren't or were teachers. You didn't take this exam, but you were a quality teacher, and you had support. 96% passing, is that a high standard? I don't know. If we wanted high standards, maybe we should lower that to 50%. Let's get rid of half of them that don't pass, because then we've got a really high standard. I'm not going to put words in your mouth, because I don't believe any of you believe that our teacher prep institutions are not capable of doing their job, or our administrators are not capable of hiring and retaining quality applicants. But the perception would seem to me to be that you trust this test over our prep institutions and our administrators. I do not.
The bill passes 55-42. The Praxis test requirement was passed by the legislature in 2013 as part of an education bill promoted by then Governor Branstad. This is Under the Golden Dome from Iowa Public Radio. I'm John Pimble.
Under the Golden Dome is supported by the Iowa Bankers Association. Bankers across Iowa are ready to help Iowans reach their financial goals to get them where they want to go. Learn about the difference of Iowa banks by following Iowa Bankers on Facebook and Twitter.
There's an omnibus bill about state utility laws in the Senate. An omnibus bill has many provisions designed to address multiple aspects of a subject. Some parts are about natural gas and rural electric cooperatives. The section receiving the most attention, though, is about energy efficiency programs. To discuss this bill, Iowa Public Radio's talk show, River to River, hosted by Ben Kiefer and State House correspondent Joyce Russell, invited guests to the Capitol's Law Library. Guests for this show are Julie Vandehoof, Public Affairs from Alliant Energy, Senator Matt McCoy, and Josh Mandelbaum, Staff Attorney for the Environmental Law and Policy Center. Senator Matt McCoy says this bill is a departure from Iowa's energy policies.
This change, this piece of legislation, threatens to undermine all of the Iowa energy efficiency programs in the state, essentially creating what's currently in the bill an opt-in provision, and it would be eligible as a consumer. You could decide to opt into the program once every 5 years for a two-month open enrollment period. That would be for both residential customers and industrial customers. So, in essence, we believe that this piece of policy, as it relates to the opt-in, will actually decimate the energy efficiency program in Iowa that we're enjoying.
Explain your view. Why does not having it mandatory across the board decimate it?
Well, you know, there's a couple reasons. Number one is you know, it's a fee that both industrial and residential users pay of up to 9%. And I think that there would be many people that would opt out of paying that, even though it's the right thing to do, and even though it results in long-term savings for the customer, because when you have to build more generation and you have to spend more money on it, it will ultimately raise energy costs, and Iowa's been doing a good job. We also know that in the future we have huge opportunities, as much as $3.3 billion in net economic benefits by getting after more energy efficient programs. We think we can save up to 17% of electric use and 15% of gas use. So it's just the wrong way for the state to be going at this time. We should be embracing more energy efficiency, not discouraging it because of a fee that's going to be an easy opt-out provision for people that just don't want to pay a fee and don't understand how it impacts them long-term.
Senator Matt McCoy, Democrat from Des Moines. Now, we reached out to several Republican senators on the Commerce Committee, including the author of this bill, Senator Jake Chapman. All those Republicans we reached out to were either unavailable today or declined to join our conversation. Nevertheless, here's some audio from Jake Chapman, senator, Republican senator, making the point that some of these rebate programs, and we're talking about, Joyce, we're talking about these programs where you buy an energy efficient, refrigerator or something, a new appliance for your house, and they're rated according to energy efficiency, and you may get a rebate depending on whether they are.
Right. And the fees that both residential and commercial customers pay into the program, that's where the money comes from to pay for the rebates.
Okay, let's hear this bit of tape from Republican Senator Jake Chapman. He is the author of this bill, making the point that some of these rebate programs are redundant in 2018 when non-energy efficient appliances aren't really available in the marketplace.
In preparation for coming down to this meeting, I thought, you know what, I'm going to stop off at Lowe's, see what appliances cost, because we get rebates through energy efficiency on appliances, what have you. The appliances today are energy efficient. You're not going to go buy a non-efficient refrigerator. They don't sell it, right? And so the market has also recognized that we have to have energy efficiency.
Another point that Jake Chapman makes is that, and a sticking point for him, is that these energy efficiency programs, that the customers don't know how much they're paying into the program. Here's him making that point when the bill was debated in committee.
My constituents don't even know what they're paying into this system. That is a shame. We should have transparency when we're taxing our constituents. In 1990, this piece of legislation came forward, and there was a 2% cap that was in place for electric, 1.5% for gas and propane. And that has been removed in 1996. And since then, we've just allowed this thing to float around through regulators, rate regulators, not legislators, not people that are responsible to respond to their constituents. That's our responsibility as legislators. I think this is an important piece and component of this bill to safeguard our constituents and consumers. I would hope that some here would be willing to step forward and say this is good for our people of Iowa to make sure that they understand what they're paying.
Okay, Republican Senator Jake Chapman there. Senator Matt McCoy, you disagree with what this bill aims to do. How do you answer the specific points there made on tape by Senator Chapman?
Well, I think, you know, one of the things he was talking about was energy efficient appliances, and certainly that's where everything's moving. But more importantly, there is there are components of the energy efficiency program that allow for you to increase weatherization, for example, blowing in more insulation into your attic, and then you get a rebate. You get a rebate when you upgrade your heating systems and you go to a more efficient, energy efficient furnace or air conditioner. Those are actually more expensive, and consumers have to be willing to pay the upgrade. And if they know they're going to stay in the place and they're going to get the savings, and they know they're doing the right thing by reducing their energy use, they'll do that. And so under that kind of a program, it would impact decisions that consumers make. On the industrial side, corporations have to look at their bottom line, and they have to make decisions based upon the cost-benefit ratios. And so if there is a pool of money and they are upgrading interior plant investments, they will make decisions based upon the return, and if there is an energy efficiency rebate, and if there is a program that will award them credits for investing in the more expensive technology.
So let's hear from some other perspectives. Our other guests at the State House Law Library, Julie Vandehoof is the manager of public affairs for Alliant Energy. How many counties is Alliant present in Iowa, Julie?
Well, thank you, Ben. Alliant Energy proudly serves just over a million customers in 83 counties across the state, providing both heat and electricity.
Okay. Many parts, as Joyce pointed out, to this energy bill. What would you like to comment on? What do you support in this bill?
Within this bill... Sure. Senate File 2311 is really about investing in Iowa's energy future. It's this legislation looks holistically at the energy industry, and this legislation creates opportunities for economic development and job growth through natural gas extension. It focuses on keeping costs low for Iowans, and this deals with regulatory efficiencies and also continuing Iowa's leadership in renewables. We have been a leader in areas of the energy portfolio. We want to continue our leadership, and we also want to work with our customers to help them be successful as well.
Mm-hmm. Specifically to this energy efficiency program that rewards the buying of appliances or a higher, more efficient furnace, for instance. What's your position on that?
Alliant Energy has been a long-standing supporter of Iowa's energy efficiency programming. And to give you a little bit of history, public policy on energy efficiency was first established in 1990. That was 28 years ago. And a lot has changed in energy since that time. And so we believe it's healthy to have a conversation at the Iowa Capitol and with legislators and stakeholders on what energy efficiency is now and how we should prepare our state for the future with energy efficiency.
Mm-hmm. So specifically to the point of Senator McCoy, that if you make it an opt-in or out proposition with these energy efficiency programs, that it will decimate the energy efficiency programs. Do you, Alliant Energy, see it that way?
To take a different perspective, we think that the legislation currently drafted does not eliminate energy efficiency. It gives customers more choice with their dollars on their utility bills. It also educates customers on the benefits of energy efficiency and the programs that are available. Energy efficiency has evolved over the past several decades. In 1990, we didn't have digital thermostats, but now we have the Nest and Ecobees, and we have technology that helps customers be more engaged with their energy use.
Josh Mandelbaum is with us of the Environmental Law and Policy Center. Josh, you are a staff attorney there, also a Des Moines City Council member. Give us your view. I guess we're on the energy efficiency program to begin with. What are your views on that?
Yeah, the bill as it currently stands would decimate energy efficiency programs. And in turn, that would have far-reaching impacts. Part of the success story that we have, not just in clean energy leadership in the state, but in terms of keeping our rates low, is because we have strong, long-standing energy efficiency programs. Energy efficiency is the least cost resource. And what that means is by implementing energy efficiency across a large number of customers, you avoid the need for building new power plants. So just since 2009 alone, we've avoided the need for 2.5 500-megawatt power plants. That's a little smaller than what Alliant just built in Marshalltown. And the new gas plant in Marshalltown was a $700 million endeavor. So avoiding those expensive new power plants is how consumers benefit from energy efficiency. And significantly scaling back and decimating these programs would lead to higher bills for consumers down the road.
Julie, if these gentlemen are right and this bill would decimate energy efficiency programs, isn't it inevitable that your company would have to build more power plants?
I don't believe that would be the case. As you look at energy efficiency, this legislation in no way, shape, or form eliminates energy efficiency. What it does is it gives customers more education on energy efficiency and gives customers more choice in participating in energy efficiency programs. Under current law, energy efficiency is a pass-through fee on customer bills. For Alliant Energy residential customers, that's 3.5% of their utility bill is passed through on each month's bill towards energy efficiency programming. We want customers to be able to know how much they're paying in for energy efficiency, but also participate in a program that meets their needs.
What's wrong with making a choice yourself, Josh, whether to buy into these programs or not?
Well, you know, the choice that they're providing is very constrained. So energy efficiency is an important energy resource, but we're singling out one resource that some policymakers don't seem to like without looking at the other energy efficiency or energy resources. So for example, we'd be okay if you wanted to create more transparency and put the energy efficiency on the bill, but also put what we're paying for a coal plant, put what we're paying for natural gas and nuclear and wind and solar, put all of these energy efficiency pieces on your bill. And if you want to give customers choices, I don't think it's a workable system, but give customers choices about opting out of other forms of energy then. I mean, that's the reason we don't do that is because it's very difficult to create an energy system in that manner. But don't single out one energy resource, particularly the least cost energy resource, the one that's most beneficial to customers, and target it that way. If you're going to do transparency, make it transparent for everyone and every resource.
Josh Mandelbaum, staff attorney for the Environmental Law and Policy Center. He is joined by Julie Vandehoof, public affairs for Light Energy, and Senator Matt McCoy. They were guests on Monday's River to River show from the Capitol's Law Library, hosted by Ben Kiefer and Joyce Russell. Republican senators declined to be on the program. The next day, the bill comes before the Senate for debate. The bulk of the debate starts at 9 in the evening. Senator Rob Hoeg says the bill won't save consumers money.
One estimate from an energy analyst in my district, happens to be Bob Latham, the brother of Tom Latham, former Republican congressman, is that this bill would cost Alliant Energy customers $139 million a year more. This bill alone.
Hoeg files many amendments, mostly about energy efficiency programs.
What Amendment 5115 does simply is it says all of the provisions in this bill, with a couple little minor exceptions, that address energy efficiency should be taken out of this bill. I can't remember a single constituent of mine ever telling me there was a problem with our energy efficiency bills, our programs. To the contrary, constituents in my district and across Iowa think energy efficiency works. When then Lieutenant Governor Reynolds chaired the Iowa Energy Plan, They cited survey data that says 97% of Iowans support energy efficiency programs, and she had at the centerpiece of that plan more energy efficiency for Iowa. Why? Because it saves consumer money and it creates jobs.
The floor manager of this bill, Senator Michael Breitbart, says Hoag's amendment should be resisted by the body. That's another way of saying don't support it.
You know, it's interesting that we haven't heard the discussion yet on who actually pays for these energy efficiency programs. It's the customers. Maybe it doesn't show up on your bill as a separate line item, but it's there. These people don't come out and give you this money for nothing. They've charged you for it. You've paid for it. And you know what? If you don't take advantage of the program, guess what? You're paying in and somebody else gets it. You know, it just amazes me that we think that these programs just are out of the goodness of some utility's heart. You know, they show the commercials on TV. And you know, this isn't against the utilities. I mean, we made it that way. In 1990, we passed a law that said that they would charge up to 2% on their electric bill. And by the way, you can't show that to the customer. You can't disclose it on their bill. Who does that? I guess at that time, the legislature did, and it was signed into law.
Senator Joe Bolcom supports the energy efficiency amendment. He sharply criticizes the entire bill.
One of the worst bills this session, one of the dumbest bills this session. And this amendment, it has the potential to save us from the Republican effort to raise utility rates on every Iowa homeowner, every Iowa business, every Iowa family, every Iowa senior, every low-income person. It's going to kill all the consumer rebates. It's going to drain money out of the Iowa economy because of all the energy we have to import. And it's going to kill thousands and thousands of jobs. Senator Breitbart, Iowa has some of the lowest electricity costs in the country and actually the lowest in the Midwest. And the reason is because of since 1990, we've invested in saving energy and not building expensive new power plants. That's unrefutable. And I don't know what you've been reading. Of course, these programs cost money and customers pay for them, but they get enormous benefits from it. Customers have saved $2 to $3 billion in new construction of new power plants because of the energy efficiency programs. We've seen data since 2009, $400 million a year in net savings to customers. Did that cost money, Senator Breitbart? Of course it did. Customers paid for those improvements, but the net benefit to them has been absolutely enormous.
Bolcom says making these programs voluntary will kill the energy efficiency programs. Senator Mark Shulgren asks the bill's floor manager, Senator Breitbart, to yield to answer questions about how the money in energy efficiency programs is spent.
I'm just a little confused based on the information I've heard from Senator Bolcom and Senator Hoag. To me, it seems like when someone invests into one of these, or I guess unbeknownst to them, when they invest into these savings groups, is the entire amount of money going back to the consumer, or is it going to some other entity? Is there a processing fee? How does this process work, if you could explain a little further?
Well, when you pay into these programs, you know, they've got to be administered. There's advertising costs. You see the ads on TV, things like that. So roughly for every $5 that gets paid in, $1 of that gets siphoned off. So 20% of those dollars that are going into the energy savings plan, 20% goes to administration of those plans.
Could you explain to me, so in the administration of those plans, who actually is administering? Who's actually keeping that 20% of this total dollar amount?
Well, the utility companies are the ones that have to administer the plan. They're the ones that do the advertising on the TV. They're the ones that, you know, send out the rebate coupons and they send out the checks and put credits on your bill, things like that.
So I guess my understanding of this bill is that by making this optional, we're allowing individuals who decide that they're better stewards of their own money, as opposed to giving it to the utility companies to decide how the money is spent. Am I accurate with that, or am I missing something?
Well, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of people that would just as soon go out and buy an energy efficient refrigerator, keep the money instead of sending it to somebody else to siphon off 20% of it and send it back to them. They'd just soon keep the money themselves, invest in that high-efficiency refrigerator, and be able to buy it a little bit sooner.
Thank you, Senator Breitbach. I appreciate the clarification on that. You know, one of the things that's interesting is literally when I got back this weekend, my wife told me that our washing machine had gone out. And we did some research on the internet to try to figure out what's going on with it. And we called an appliance repair person to come in and tell us what was going on with our Maytag washing machine. And he started to explain to me that the new appliances, for the most part, are made in Mexico or China, and they're made for high efficiency. He said these things are designed so they use less water, they use less electricity, except that instead of them being like the good old-fashioned ones that were done from Montgomery Ward's or Sears that lasted you 20 years, these were designed to last you 5 years. And if you took into account the cost of replacing it every 5 years versus the money that you're saving on electricity or water, they actually are really inefficient. And so he made the recommendation I go on Craigslist and find an old washing machine that was less efficient in electricity and water consumption, but overall would last me much longer and be better at actually cleaning the clothes, so I wouldn't have to go through multiple wash cycles. And I was amazed that this repairman was telling me these things. So my wife and I have had this conversation over the weekend of what we're going to do. Whether we buy a washing machine that has an agitator in it, non-agitator, whether we buy something that's kind of a newfangled one that was made in China, or whether we buy one that was made in America before when they were really well made. And so I appreciate the information. I'm still considering all of my options with this process, both in the appliance side of it and in this bill, but I do appreciate the answers to the questions I have, because I want to believe that consumers should at least have a choice. To me, this makes all the sense in the world that trusting Iowans is better than trusting utility companies.
As Senator Hoag makes closing remarks for his amendment, he says he doesn't know what alternate universe he is living in after hearing Senator Shelgren advocating for buying old appliances that use more energy.
Wow. It's hard to know how to respond to some of those things. Let me say this. These are proven programs that work. If you vote no on this amendment, you're voting against 20,000 jobs in Iowa. 20,000 jobs in Iowa. And you're voting to throw away a program that saves $2 for every dollar that's spent, raising rates. Don't take my word for it. You've listened to the companies. You listen to the utilities board. It saves all consumers money, whether you participate in the programs or not. That's why Iowa has the lowest electrical rates in the region. And you are proposing a bill that throws that away, throws away 20,000 jobs, and jeopardizes Iowa customers to the tune of over $130 million a year. That is a bad bill. This fixes one big slice of it. Get the energy efficiency programs out of this bill. There haven't been any people clamoring for this. People like these programs. They like appliance rebates. They like having appliance recycling programs so that the utility will come and take away that old energy efficient refrigerator in the garage. They like these programs. They're important to people. They're important to customers. They're important for our economy. They're important for jobs. I would move Amendment 5115 and ask for a record.
On party lines, the amendment loses. Hoag has a total of 8 amendments. Most are about maintaining the energy efficiency programs, rebates, as well as provisions that would undermine much of the bill. All of them are defeated or withdrawn. Although there are other sections to this bill, much of the late-night debate focuses on the funding of energy efficiency programs. Toward the end, Senator Jake Chapman voices his support for this bill. Chapman says as he talks to Iowans about fees for energy programs, they are irate.
This is the reason why they distrust government. You hide a fee from them. If you're a MedAmerican user, upwards of 9% on your utility bill is going to pay for these programs. And then on top of it, they think this is out of the profits of the utility company. False. Not true. It's a pass-through. They take their administrative fees and it's passed back through to the consumers. So this notion that somehow this has, and look, I'll tell you this. I am all fine with energy efficiency. I just built a home a couple of years ago. We did things to try making our home energy efficient because that's me as a consumer wanting to see a return on my investment. But I'm not asking others to subsidize for me to make that decision. And perhaps it had its place. Perhaps it did back in 1990, when you could pick from one or two refrigerators that were energy efficient when you went to Lowe's. Well, go down to Lowe's today. Go to Home Depot. I'm not singling out Lowe's. That's fine. You can go to Home Depot, Menards, wherever else, Nebraska Furniture Mart. They're almost all Energy Star rated appliances. They all qualify. Now, Senator Shelgren mentioned this. Here's the real scam in this. The real scam is for low-income people that are tenants and are paying utility bills. They're paying on this hidden tax, fee, whatever you want to call it, and then they don't even qualify because they're not the property owner to get that money back. That's what this energy efficiency is all about. We're shedding light on what it really is. And by the way, if you like it, if Iowans, 95% of Iowans like it, and I wasn't a big fan of going from opt-in to opt-out. I conceded on that. Now they're going to have to take an affirmative action to get out of the program. But if they like it, stay in it. Keep putting money into it. We're going to now make it disclosed that this is what you're paying. But that's fine. If they want to continue the program, let them continue the program. Otherwise, let's let them get out of it. We talk about corporate welfare. I hear that all the time on that side of the aisle. This is truly a subsidization of a whole industry, and it really has brought to light how an industry has been built on trying to take money from all these different folks and redistributing it over here for these particular projects. And we simply disagree on the policy of this, and that's fine. I respect the opinion over there. But this notion that somehow this is a bad bill, I think this is a great bill. I think it's a great bill for consumers. I think it's a great bill for Iowans. I'm glad to have shed a little bit of light on the facts, because we keep hearing rates are going up. Well, we'll find out, won't we? We will.
On a mostly party line vote, the bill passes 27-31. Two Republicans vote against, Senator Rick Bertrand and Charles Schneider. It is now eligible for debate in the House. This is Under the Golden Dome, a weekly podcast about the legislative session. I'm John Pimble. It's been a very busy debate week. On Thursday, there was a four-hour debate for a bill revising codes for last year's voter ID law. Advocates say it makes the state's voting system better. Democrats filed multiple amendments critical of voter ID, like Representative Bruce Hunter.
There are currently 2,124,479 registered voters in the state of Iowa, none of whom have committed a voter impersonation.
This series brings you lengthy discussion about bills, policy, and law from the Capitol. Each show focuses on a handful of the many possible stories. I can only make this program happen through the collaboration of others. They include our Statehouse reporter, Joyce Russell. Also contributing to the series is Katerina Sestarik and Clay Masters. Our talk show team is very involved. Producers Ben Stanton, Emily Woodbury, and Lindsay Moon, with host Ben Kiefer. We also get help from Kay Henderson of Radio Iowa. It's possible the session will last only 85 days. Well, that's one proposal, but so far this schedule is scheduled for 100, taking us to the middle of April, and this show will be there till the end. New episodes come out Friday nights through your favorite podcast subscription program, the IPR app, and our website, iowapublicradio.org. Do us a favor, post a link for this show on your Facebook or Twitter stream. We would love that. Under the Golden Dome is a production of Iowa Public Radio.